Welcome to Health Cetera's podcast. Misinformation about the COVID-19 vaccine persists, with people claiming that the vaccine is killing those who receive it. To date, 9,000 deaths in the U.S. have been reported to have occurred after people got the vaccine. But as many of us once learned, correlation does not imply causation. We have seen over 600,000 lives lost to COVID-19 in the United States alone, and its new Delta variant is even killing those who are considered healthy and weren't at high risk of severe illness from the original form of coronavirus. There is risk involved in everything we do in life, and it's irresponsible to provide any information that is not balanced or put into context in a way that discusses both risks and benefits. Dr. Blima Marcus is an oncology nurse practitioner who is an expert in vaccine education. She has been a leader in providing scientific evidence on vaccines to people in the Orthodox Jewish community and continues to enable people to make informed decisions about vaccinating themselves and their families. In this podcast, Dr. Diana Mason, host of this program, speaks with Dr. Marcus about COVID vaccine misinformation and the idea of comparative risk. This interview first aired on Health Cetera in the Catskills on WIOX Radio on July 28th, 2021.
Blima Marcus, thank you so much for joining me on Health Cetera in the Catskills today to talk about this important issue of misinformation about COVID vaccines and COVID. Thank you so much for coming back on to the program.
My pleasure. Always happy to join you.
So let's start with sort of an update. Where are we at with COVID? This has actually been a very interesting week because I just heard on the radio today that the head of the CDC has said that masks wearing by people who are vaccinated is going to move forward when you're indoors because they've discovered that the viral load of even vaccinated people is the same as the load of the virus for people who are unvaccinated, meaning that even though I'm vaccinated, if I'm out there and I've been exposed to COVID, I could be carrying the virus even if I'm not getting sick. And that's new information, isn't it?
It is, you know, and I kind of wish we had had this conversation 3 weeks ago. Things would have been so much simpler.
Yes.
This whole week. I mean, today alone, globally, there were 500,000 positive cases globally. And things have really changed rapidly. And everything we discussed today might not even be accurate in a few days. So I think that's important because things are changing so rapidly. The Delta variant is causing so much spread, you know, states that were in such a great place before, countries that had no cases for weeks or months are now seeing a ton of spread, a lot of hospitalizations. So it's very worrisome right now. And what you're saying, it's partially new because what we did know straight off the bat when the new vaccines were being studied, we knew that people can hold on to the virus in their bodies, but they won't get sick. The vaccine will have primed their bodies to recognize that as a foreign agent and neutralize it, you know? So we knew that you can have it in you. What we weren't sure yet was whether you can transmit it. But it did seem over the last few months, at least with the other easier variants, that vaccinated people were not sources of infection. You know, if you were vaccinated, you were not going to infect other people. But it does seem, especially from the last few days and, you know, the CDC director's announcement today, that the Delta variant is changing everything. And in her statement, she actually said it's behaving as a completely different virus.
Wow.
You know, we're calling it COVID because it's a coronavirus, but it's a variant that is so different. She said it's actually one of the top most infectious viruses ever, probably up there with the measles and HIV, or maybe hepatitis B, just really virulent. So it needs to be taken really seriously. And I think many people who were on the fence about getting vaccinated or wearing masks were kind of feeling comfortable a month ago. Mm-hmm. You know, May and June weren't very worrisome in a lot of areas. I mean, I know in the South and the Midwest, things were still not in a good place, but otherwise, people kind of got to a place where they felt like they can get through the pandemic without vaccinating. Now everything's changed.
And in fact, I'm vaccinated and I have not been wearing the mask. I feel like I'm sick, but I've now started to wear it again, particularly when I'm indoors. One, because of the breakthrough cases, it doesn't mean I'm going to die if I get it, but I could still get sick. But more so now that I could be spreading it to other people, and I don't want to do that.
Correct. And I feel the exact same way. And you know, what's interesting is I'm actually having a hard time masking again.
Yes.
And I almost feel like what people felt a year ago when there were so many people that were against masking early on. Now I'm like, wow, it's so hard to put on a mask. Now I feel like I'm past that. But you know what? It's not such a big difference for me. I work in healthcare. We're masked anyway. So it's really only about putting it on if I'm shopping or in areas with a lot of other people. But it is frustrating to take a step back. And it's really, that's the nature of the pandemic. You know, I think no one believed Dr. Fauci back in March 2020 when he said this can take 2 years.
Yeah.
But here we are. We're 17 months later and we're taking a big step back.
Yeah, we are.
We are.
So I want to talk about what we know about the vaccine. As I shared, there is misinformation out here about the vaccine with some people, including people on this radio station, saying that it is not safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's causing deaths and that it's causing other adverse effects and that it is going to have long-term changes in your body. So what do we know? And here in the Catskill region, we, for the most part, have the Moderna vaccine, although the J&J vaccine too.
Mm-hmm.
But the conditions initially for the Pfizer vaccine, the extreme cold temperatures were beyond the capacity of most communities up here. So mm-hmm. most people have had the Moderna and J&J vaccine. Talk a little bit about the vaccine adverse reporting, events reporting system and what we know from that.
Sure. So before I do that, I just want to clarify the difference between a side effect and an adverse effect, because people use it interchangeably and they're very different. A side effect is something you expect to see, not that you like it, but it's something that many people will have, and they're not harmful. So these vaccines are considered pretty reactogenic, which means you will likely react. So you'll have aches and pains, maybe a fever, you'll be tired. I had all of those symptoms. I was
in bed.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. It was a day and a half. My husband had them. It's a rough going for a day and a half or 2 days. Those are side effects. Now, adverse effects are a whole different category. And to clarify how you determine what an adverse effect is, I'm just going to backtrack really quick. When you do a phase 3 trial, that's the trial to see if the vaccine works, not if it's safe. That was determined in phase 2. So once you know it's safe, you give it to maybe 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people to see if it works, right? Are people going to get COVID if they've been vaccinated? 20, 30, 40, or 50,000 people is a great number to determine if it works. And the reason why these vaccines were produced so quickly is because they worked so quickly. You know, immediately all the people with the placebo caught COVID because we're in the middle of a pandemic. So they immediately saw that it worked. But 30, 40,000 people is not enough to catch rare events.
Mm.
And that is what VAERS, or the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, is for. It's also known as like post-marketing monitoring or post-licensure monitoring, because rare events, you're not going to see if you're giving something to 50,000 people. But once you license it or you get the emergency use authorization, now you're giving the vaccine to millions and millions of people. And that's where the rare adverse effects are going to start trickling in. Those reports are going to start coming in.
That's like the J&J, the reports on AstraZeneca vaccine, J&J. Of blood clots and even,
absolutely.
Yeah, yes, some deaths.
Absolutely. That's exactly how it works. And we saw that right away with Moderna and Pfizer with some reports of allergy. I don't know if you remember.
Yes.
And they were very, very, very mild, like 5 or 10 cases. They all recovered. And then we didn't really hear anything after that. So I'm not sure if people were alarmed. They just expected possible reaction in some people. And we never really heard about that again, but that's the mechanism. People report things that occur. And then on the back end, all of the monitoring agencies go through the data and sift through it to determine if it's related or not. And that's when they issue alerts, right? They issued an alert about an allergy possibility. And then when 7 out of 12 million people who got J&J sent in reports about a clot. They issued an alert for that. They said there is a rare, you know, possibility about blood clots. And the same thing happened with the AstraZeneca vaccine in England. After giving it to many millions of people, reports trickle in. They look for causality. If there's no causality or it's just random occurrences, they deny a causation. But if they believe that it is caused by the vaccine, they will issue that and add it to the adverse event list, which means one out of several million people may develop this or that experience.
And I just want to point out for people that this adverse effect reporting, it means that if I had the vaccine and I had this sort of weird reaction, this adverse effect, and it's reported after it occurs, it doesn't mean necessarily the vaccine caused it. One of the things that I know with the J&J and AstraZeneca vaccine is that they were looking at how often would these blood clots occur anyway, whether you got the vaccine or not. And so sometimes when these are really rare events, it's hard to determine, was it caused by the vaccine, or were these people going to get these adverse effects anyway, have these conditions anyway?
So for example, they're looking at miscarriage rates in pregnant women who are getting vaccinated. And we know that the average miscarriage incidence is 12%. So if miscarriages are occurring in people who got the vaccine and they report a miscarriage, if it's at the same 12% occurrence, we're not assuming that it's the vaccine. We're assuming it's the usual rate and not worse than that. I do want to just point out to people listening that we're giving vaccines now to billions of people. And if we did not give out a vaccine right now, we would see millions of strokes in people randomly, random occurrences of strokes. We would see heart attacks. We would see sudden death without knowing why. We would see new diagnoses open up. People develop Parkinson's disease. People develop multiple sclerosis. People, you know, get into car accidents and die, because that is what happens across the world. Things happen. And what's difficult for many people who are struggling with this is that now that they're vaccinated, everyone's leaping to the conclusion that whatever's occurring in their lives or the lives of their loved ones is as a result of the vaccine.
Yes, yes.
So that's what's difficult for people to separate.
Yes. So this gets into the issue. So deaths. So I believe that the CDC is now reporting over 9,000 deaths among people who received the vaccine. Again, we don't know what caused it, but people, there were deaths that we reported after somebody got the vaccine. So people should be informed. They should have this information. I agree with that. But to me, the most important thing is talking about comparative risk, and that people need to understand that we take risks when we step outside of our houses. When we walk down the steps, you know, as I'm getting older, I think about falling down those steps. When I get in my car, I'm taking a risk every time I get in my car. And I like to point out, most people don't realize this, but for some people, if you drink too much water, you can die from that. It's a risk that some people have. So how do we help people to understand that yes, everything you put in your body has a risk. However, those risks can't begin to compare to the risk of getting COVID.
You know, it's very interesting because perception of risk, whether you're going to be in that little category of people, is so interesting. And I did my doctorate capstone study on high-risk Ashkenazi Jewish women who have family histories of breast cancer. And I asked them whether they'd be interested in being screened for the genetic mutation that sometimes occurs. And when I asked them in a survey whether they felt they were at risk for developing breast cancer, they have all the signs. They've got multiple family members who are young with breast and ovarian cancer. They're Ashkenazi Jewish, which is a risk factor. They all felt like they're not going to get breast cancer. I don't think I'm at risk. So we're not great at really determining that. We kind of think it happens to other people.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very important to put risk into context. You know, what's a bigger risk? What risks can you live with? What risks can you not live with? But I do want to backtrack because I think this is a really important part. You said that the CDC reported about 9,000 deaths. I need to correct you. It's not the CDC. It's that 9,000 deaths have been submitted by individuals. And I'm not suggesting that people are lying. It's actually considered fraud to submit a false report. However, what people don't realize is that theirs is not verified data. It's a group Excel sheet. Let's look at it that way. Anyone can send in a report of anything. And it's been misused in the past very frequently. Some people, some scientists deliberately try to show you how things can get submitted all the time. There's a common joke that someone submitted something and said he got the flu shot and turned into the Great Hulk. It's there. It's on the CDC website. So we use these little examples to show that theirs means nothing until the numbers have been crunched, analyzed, and investigated. So I just don't want to be repeating that 9,000 deaths have occurred. Rather, we should phrase it as people have submitted reports. They could be multiple reports. It could be that a person passed away and two physicians and three family members submitted reports on the same person. We don't know. There's so much we don't know. But what gives me comfort is knowing that, for example, they stopped giving out the J&J vaccine for a week after 7 reports of clots came in out of 12 million injections. I would be shocked if reports of deaths are coming in and they're being completely ignored. That is simply not how the system works. So the fact that every one of these adverse events get followed up on and investigated and steps are taken, whether the vaccine is held, discontinued, or resumed with warnings. Like personally, I warn young women to choose the mRNA vaccines. If they're young, if they're female, if they're on birth control pills, if they smoke, if they're at somewhat risk of a clot, even though the risk of a clot from the vaccine is tiny, if there are other options, take them. So I have a hard time believing that people are submitting thousands of reports of death and people are choosing to simply ignore them. The more realistic explanation is that people die in the course of their life, either before vaccination, after vaccination, and they simply have not been found to be caused by a vaccine. So,
and our choice, I mean, right now we have substantially over 600,000 deaths in this country in a year and a half from COVID. And the current, I also think it's important for people to realize that the other aspect of the Delta variant is that it's producing serious illness in people who are not getting seriously ill with the original variant. So younger people are ending up in the ICU on respirators, children who before were not at such a risk.
So what we're seeing is it's definitely much more contagious and highly transmissible. We are seeing younger people getting sick. What we're not seeing yet, and this may change, is whether they're getting sicker, whether it's more dangerous or more deadly. There's no data yet to suggest that. So I'm hopeful that we won't see much sicker people. Yes.
But it's also complicated, isn't it? Because we have better treatments now. We know of better ways to treat
Absolutely.
The virus than we did a year ago, for sure.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's something that many people, you know, bring up to me as, you know, when they express their frustration or mistrust of how the pandemic is being handled. They're saying, well, this doesn't work and that works and it's being withheld from us. People are watching this unfold in real time. And it can be very difficult. You know, right now we're going back to masking. 2 months ago, we were being told we don't need to mask, and it frustrates people, but that's because the facts on the ground are changing and we need to adapt to that. You know, there's no use in following guidance from 16 months ago. So when it came to treatment, there was so much trial and error until we found out the right combination of things that do work and things that don't work. So we do know that monoclonal antibodies are fabulous for people. If you can get it within a day or two of catching COVID, there are strict criteria. I think you're not supposed to be hospitalized. You're not supposed to be on oxygen. So you kind of want to, the second you're positive for that test, you do want to try to source a place to get monoclonal antibodies. Steroids have been shown to be helpful. Anticoagulation or blood thinners have been shown to be helpful. Unfortunately, other methods that people have strong beliefs in, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, have not been shown to be helpful, despite people having strong faith in them, it simply hasn't been borne out. So we do have better methodology now. We know how to handle the cases better now. And I'm really hopeful that it'll help us battle, you know, this surge.
Yeah, my understanding on ivermectin is that the jury's still out, that the trials that have been out there that were they were suggesting where it was having an effect were too small. They were small clinical rigorous clinical trials, and that there are some more rigorous clinical trials underway with that, which would be great because it's a long-standing drug if it worked, and it's going to be cheaper than some of the new ones. Yeah.
So far, the data's not great, but maybe.
Yeah. So then. I think the other issue here is that people need to be mindful that we're still deeply in this, that if you haven't been vaccinated, it's not just about you, it's about you and your friends and family and community. This is about your being able to spread it or not, and that includes with the masking. I'm very concerned that people see this as it's all about me. It's not. It's all about our communities. It is. And I think it's one of the reasons why we're now starting to see mandates for people to get vaccinated. There was a joint statement that was just issued by a host of health professions organizations saying they were that the healthcare organizations, hospitals and nursing homes should mandate vaccines for the healthcare workers. But of course, if I'm a healthcare worker, or if there's a and the VA has mandated it for its workers, and there is some talk that the federal government may mandate that you either get the vaccine or you get tested regularly, as well as that you mask up and what have you. And I know there's going to be pushback on this. On the other hand, isn't there an ethical responsibility that we have as healthcare workers and as employees in our community, people working in our community, to try to stop this virus and try to protect those around us?
People have asked me for my personal opinion on mandates for the last several months, and I've consistently said I believe in mandates for healthcare workers. I believe it's unethical for anyone to be in a setting with compromised, ill people and not be vaccinated. I think that's not acceptable. And I'm glad to see that a lot of healthcare organizations are taking that position right now. And it's unfortunate because, you know, we've all been seeing how a lot of healthcare providers are hesitant as well. You know, we're all human and people are susceptible to fears and misinformation. So I am happy to see that at least within the healthcare setting, hopefully the risk to the patients there will be reduced if more of our providers are vaccinated. So I absolutely agree with that. When it comes to mandating other people, it's a struggle because there's so much opposition and people have such strong opinions about personal rights and individual rights. And I mean, it's such a delicate subject. Mm-hmm. I think people are changing their minds. I'm starting to see a case for more restrictions in place. We're not talking so much as mandating people to receive vaccines, rather restricting their civil liberties if they don't get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. For example, in France and in Israel, that's how they're defining it. They're saying you don't need to get vaccinated, but you can't come into a coffee shop, you know? Yes, unless you have a negative COVID test on your own dime. The government will not pay for you to get COVID tested weekly if there's a vaccine available. I believe that's perfectly reasonable. Naturally, people are very angry about it, but you don't have a right to spread disease and kill people. That is not an inherent human right. And we're in a pandemic, and that changes things for people.
And one last point is that the more that we let this virus just continue to replicate, the more opportunities it's going to have to even be more contagious, to mutate to a more contagious and more severe, produce more severe illness kind of variation. And I think people need to keep that in mind. I'm sort of done with COVID. Right.
I'm exhausted. And I think everyone has COVID fatigue right now. it's burdensome mentally and physically, and people's businesses are suffering because of how we're all living our lives differently. And now the travel industry is taking a hit again because of Delta. So we're also tired of it. But at the end of the day, it's really about saving lives and preserving families and, limiting harm.
Yeah, because long COVID, just in our last couple minutes, long COVID. Talk about long COVID, what we know.
Long COVID is exceptionally real. That's the first thing I need to say. Many people are attributing it to anxiety and it's all in your head. That's completely inaccurate. These are symptoms that have been documented. And Fitbits, have you seen the data on Fitbits?
No.
They're monitoring sustained high heart rates in people for months after recovering from COVID. So you've got data right there. People are wearing their Fitbits and it's recording their heart rate, their oxygen. They are having long-term effects, some people more than others. Some people are completely debilitated for months and months. There's a lot of frustration among people with long COVID because we don't know how to treat them or how to help them. So it's very frustrating. And it's not only about preventing death. It's about preventing disease because the disease is bad, and because you never know who will progress to serious disease. You can take that risk. And just as a reminder, Diana, even though vaccinated people are still catching COVID right now, again, with the Delta variant, I think it's really important to remind everyone that they are not getting seriously ill. Our ICUs are still primarily filled with unvaccinated people. It is still like that right now. I hope it doesn't change. But for right now, vaccinated people are not requiring hospitalization and certainly not intensive care. So the vaccine is still very useful in preventing serious illness. And it's still, that's how vaccines work, not just about preventing illness, but mitigating it.
My understanding is that the death rate from people who are unvaccinated, right? The death rate from COVID right now, 97.7% among people who are unvaccinated. So
That's correct.
that's the story. That's why they're calling it the pandemic now of the unvaccinated, although some people object to that. Well, Lima Marcus, I want to thank you so much, Dr. Marcus, for coming on to HealthCetera in the Catskills today and talking with us about this very important subject. You're an expert in this area, and we greatly appreciate your taking the time.
My
Thank you.
pleasure.
You've been listening to a podcast of HealthCetera in the Catskills. For more podcasts and discussions of important health issues and policies affecting health, go to HealthCetera's website and blog at www.healthmediapolicy.com. That's www.healthmediapolicy.com. This podcast was produced by Dr. Diana Mason and production assistant Kai Volsey.